Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Between Two Pods. My name is Slade. I just got to thinking about it. I haven't recorded one of these in like 2 months because of how far ahead I am on the recording schedule. So, this episode, it's a special one because we have a question to answer, and it's called, What the Fuck is a 3DO? And here I am with the 3DO experience. Hi, guys.
Hey, what's up? We're trying to answer that question ourselves.
One of these two voices should be the familiar one of Bill Barber. He was on for the gaming and collecting episode. So this is it also makes you my first repeat guest, Bill, by the way.
I mean, I'm kind of in every episode when you really think about it, like in a roundabout sort of way.
He gets around.
It's true. There's always like a little bit of picking. I think the last episode, the time recording, I said, I have a small collection, but no Bill level of collection of games.
I thought I wasn't going to make that episode. Then Bill level collection came out. I'm like, oh, there I am.
That was a fun one, making him do the blind draws to like rank games. That was a lot of fun. So let's hear a bit about your podcast. Could you tell everybody what it is and where they can find it?
Sure. Do you want to take this one, Thrak?
Sure, why not? So the 3DO Experience is a podcast that Bill started, and then he gave up on it, and then I forced him to do it again. And basically it's us trying to figure out essentially what the 3DO is, going through the history of it, all the various consoles, controllers, games, all that good stuff. Just trying to be a nice, comprehensive audio history of an obscure 90s video game console. Because really, that's what was missing in the world. So we are trying to fill a niche. And I think we have been succeeding in filling that niche. But we also talk about other stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty routine for an episode to go off on a random tangent about something that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. And then we'll somehow circle it back to the topic at the end.
Very cool. Now, let's start kind of easy. What was the first 3DO game you played, right? I mean, there's maybe like four games for the whole system.
But well, there's like 12.
Okay. I can tell you, we have 26 episodes, sir, and we've covered at least 17 games.
What was the first one? What was the game that said, man, this really is an experience.
So the first game that we covered, or the first game that we both personally played for the system?
Let's say personally played.
Gex.
I think about that one.
Gex.
I think Gex might be mine as well.
Because it's kind of like the one game that the console's really known for.
Yeah.
So this is the second time Gex has came up for me, by the way, in this show. The other time was with Liv and Furry on when Between Two Gamers was still around and they came on here. And I don't know what Gex is. I'm going to admit it.
He's a lizard that makes a lot of movie references and does platforming things.
Imagine the most dated platformer possibly ever made.
I was about to say, so like another 90s platformer mascot is what I've just heard.
Yes.
He was definitely
trying to fill that Mario Sonic craze at the time. And surprisingly, he's one of the few that's kind of stuck around, at least in people's memories,
Mostly for his tendency to spout pop culture references every 3 seconds. Like, you'll play a, if you weren't born in the 90s and you play Gex, you're going to be very confused by half the shit he says.
What's a mystery van?
My favorite is in Gex, too, is the, hi, I'm here for the real world interview.
So is he like kid-friendly Duke Nukem when it comes to pop culture references? Is that what I'm getting out of this?
To a degree, there's some that are a little not okay these days. Like, I think one of his most famous ones is in Gex 2. There's a level where you can catch fire, and Gex will be just on fire, and his comment will be, I'm flaming in the manly way. Which I'm just like, oh, they could not get away with that one nowadays.
That's a dated joke right there.
There's only one joke in a Gex game that I still think is funny even today, and it's in Gex 2. And there's a point in the game where you're in this level that's like just an utter like shithole, and Gex just like makes the comment where he just goes, ah, New Jersey. And that one gets me every time. I'm like, okay, they knew what they were doing there.
That's a good one. Like, even if you haven't been to New Jersey, you just agree with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like you're born and you just know New Jersey sucks, right?
Mm. Yeah.
It's like the first little bit of information that you learn. I'm sure we have somewhere one single New Jersey listener who's like, yeah, you're right, though.
Doesn't the devil live in like a hole in New Jersey or something? Like in the Pine Barrens?
I thought that was Georgia.
Yeah, pretty sure. Well, no, he came
Jersey.
To. No, he came Jersey to.
Devil. Oh, yeah, he came down to Georgia for fiddle battle. That's right.
Well, he got defeated by Charlie Daniels and then he went up to New Jersey.
Yeah.
True. And then he entered Guitar Hero 3 and he had a rock battle with him.
<That's true. laughs> He lost that as well. So here's a question. How did you two come together for this podcast? Like, you know, obviously, Thrak, I don't know if you collect as much as Bill does, obviously, but what, of all niche systems and consoles you could pick, how did you say, hey, let's do this one?
Well, I think it's because, yeah, I met Bill. I think it was, were we in Dave's Discord?
It was Dave's and Chris's to a degree.
Okay.
Mostly
yeah.
Dave's though, because Chris, I wasn't super active in Chris's at the time.
Yeah. So like, yeah, we were in Dave's Tales from the Backlogs Discord, and then he sent me an invite, and then I was just looking through all of his stuff, and there was some about a 3DO podcast, and so I asked him, "What is that?" And he's like, "Oh, I was doing this podcast about the 3DO, but it wasn't keeping going or whatever." So I basically forced him, be like, "I'll do it. Let's just bring it back. Like, I'll help you with it." And that's kind of where we're at. Because I just thought it would be funny to, like, co-host a podcast about a random system.
What's funny is at that point, we hadn't even technically met yet. We had a few, like, I think a month later, we did a GNC two-parter talking about Sonic games. And I think that kind of was enough of a testing ground where I was kind of like, okay, this could work.
Yeah, I think the two parts are, what, like 7 hours?
The second episode on the 3D games is 3 hours long alone. Yeah. So. Yeah.
There's a lot to talk about with 3D Sonic, and we didn't even finish. Because we just tried to keep to the main series.
Yeah, and after I moved, because I was in the middle of moving at the time, I finally got everything established. And I was like, all right, let's do this. And we basically have been going nonstop since. We took a bit of a hiatus due to some scheduling conflicts, but we've pretty much been going consistently since then.
Yeah, and I was not planning to buy and collect for the 3DO. Like, my initial idea was that, like, oh, Bill will play them on the native hardware, and then I'll just emulate them. But I just couldn't help myself and started eBay searching and found one and a bunch of games for it. So we are where we are.
Well, it's like you realize really fast, like, when you start collecting 3DO, that it's surprisingly fascinating, like, just the amount of stuff that's on it.
And it's not as expensive as you think it would be.
Right. So, here's something I want to know. If we're going to show off an episode of the 3DO experience, what's an episode that you would pick to, like, introduce somebody to? See, Thrak's already laughing about this, so I feel like he's got a good idea.
Well, my personal favorite episode is probably the Madden one.
That's a good one.
Because I love the Madden NFL football series. Like, I have a huge soft spot for sports games. Like, I grew up with them. It's just, it's part of my history of gaming. So, like, playing a dedicated Madden to the 3DO, it allowed me to, like, kind of go deep into sort of my, like, sports video game knowledge. So, that's what I liked about that one.
For me, it would probably be the Twisted episode, because I feel like that's the one where you really found our kind of, like, shtick for the podcast, as they say.
Yeah, because I dragged like one of my real life friends to play that game with me to get their experience, and they were very confused the entire time, as they should be.
Twisted is like the perfect example of a 3DO game where it's like it's so just bizarre and outlandish, but like it's also really fascinating to look into its weird history. And I think that kind of perfectly sums up what my whole idea behind a 3DO experience would be.
Yes.
Always be plugging, Bill. Always be plugging. It's a 3DO experience. I see what you did there.
I try.
So here's something I want to know, because everybody, you know, when you think about a game and when you talk about it with other people, a lot of different things will come up in conversation, right? You have, like, gameplay, you have narrative, but what I would like to know is there, like, a particular score or any kind of music that stands out for any of the games that you've talked about or reviewed?
Return Fire. Return? I had to think about it for a second. Yeah, because Return Fire uses a lot of famous classical pieces, like The Hall of the Mountain King and like Hallelujah and all that stuff. And it is surprisingly effective when you're playing that game because it's pieces that we all know. We may not know like the names of them, but it's like, oh yeah, I've heard that before.
Right.
And it was surprising how well it fits within the gameplay of that game.
Another one that's somewhat interesting to me was Road Rash, because Road Rash's OST is entirely like 90s like grunge and alternative tracks, and the main ones are by Soundgarden, but there's a ton of like indie bands in there that I've only heard of through Road Rash on 3DO, and there's some interesting stuff. Like I think one of the bands was like named like Sledge Driver or something.
And one of the certain copies of 3DO Road Rash actually gave you a soundtrack CD, so you could like listen to the songs, which is pretty cool.
That's really cool, actually. This is gonna be maybe a tough one for you, but is there a particular game that you know you've wanted to cover for the 3DO experience so far, but you just haven't been able to find it? It's like way too expensive. Is there a game that like? I'm sure there is.
I think we're both thinking the same game here.
We think.
I'll go and then you go.
Sure. What do you got?
Lucien's Quest.
Yep.
Okay.
Lucien's Quest. It's the one JRPG for the 3DO.
Okay.
It had one. And yeah, it's a very expensive game. Like it's what? Like, is it $1,000?
It's up there. Like the disc alone tends to be like triple digit.
Yeah.
Just for the disc?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because JRPGs always go up in value. They retain their value.
Especially when you have the record as being the lone like JRPG on the system, it's going to spike regardless.
Exactly. And I've heard mixed things about that game, but I've always wanted to play it. You know, from looking at the footage of it, I'm like, even if this is bad, I think I'll have a good time with it. So, but I think me and Bill, we're going to have to emulate that one just because it's so expensive.
Yeah. Either that or I might import the Saturn version just to play it on a console.
Oh, yeah. I forgot there was a Saturn version.
Do you know what the price difference is off the top of your head? Is it like from, you know, $1,000 to like $700, and that makes it reasonable all of a sudden?
Oh, no. The
it
Saturn,
would be to him.
The Saturn version goes for like $50.
Oh, like, okay. That's pocket change in comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. On price charting, Lucien's Quest loose price average is $415.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So beyond this, and this kind of rolls me into another question, what's the biggest challenge for y'all with this podcast?
Playing the games?
Yeah. To be honest, as much as some of the games have been like surprising gems, there's been a few that are like they're just so bad that I'm like to me, like the one of the biggest struggles I think we've had to go. Well, I mean, Balls was bad, but that was over in like 5 minutes. The hardest one for me to get through was D. Like D just drained
D,
the hell D out of
sucked.
Me.
D sucked. I hated that one.
What
so
is
bad.
What is D?
So
God, that can be taken out of context so bad.
D is a very early 90s horror game. For the time it came out, it was considered very ahead of its time because it used a lot of full motion CGI cutscenes. The game is basically entirely full motion CGI cutscenes.
Right.
And it was this big narrative project, but it has not aged well in the slightest. And by today's standards, it is downright just bad.
I think by like 2 years after that game came out, it was outdated.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's one of those games where it felt like it was trying to redefine what horror could be in video gaming.
Gotcha.
But it was pre-Resident Evil. Like, once Resident Evil came out, everyone's like, oh, that's what we do. And I believe the sequel to D was just a Resident Evil clone.
Well, there was Enemy Zero, which was more... It was kind of like a more refined version of what they
did.
That's
the Saturn one, I think.
Yes. And then D2 was like this weird Silent Hill Resident Evil-ish game that's... more interesting, but still not very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is going to have to be, you know, separate for both y'all. You don't have to agree on this. But, all right, I'm going to my retro store. I'm buying a 3DO. What three games am I getting with it?
Do you want to go first on this one, and then I'll go?
I would say Road Rash, Return Road Fire, and Gex.
And Gex.
I would say Road Rash, Gex, and Icebreaker.
Icebreaker's a good one.
Okay, so real quick, let's go into it, because you keep saying Road Rash. Is this a racing game, or tell me about it.
So Road Rash is part of EA's... It's no longer active, but for a while they had the long-running Road Rash series of motorcycle racing games with action elements. And essentially, what you do is you race down a street. It's kind of like almost a precursor to Need for Speed in a way, where you're racing on a bike and like you're going through these like long-winded like races against a whole bunch of other bikers. And one of the gimmicks is you can actually like punch the other bikers when you get close to them and like fight them. And you want to avoid wrecking your bike or getting caught by the police. And it's a really fun, high-paced like racing game. Like they've been around. They started on the Genesis, and the 3DO one was the first quote-unquote 3D entry in the series. And it's in a lot of ways considered the best entry in the series entirely,
and the best game on the system.
As
a lot of people,
as of our, I believe as of our polling, it's still my favorite on the system. I think it's your second favorite.
It's my second favorite, yes.
Okay. So, and then Return Fire. Is this, I'm guessing this is some kind of like maybe military shooter?
Return Fire is like a vehicular combat game where basically you have, you have like a helicopter, a jeep, a tank, and like an ATV. And the idea is like it's a capture the flag sort of thing.
Okay.
Where you have to go from one end of the map to the other end to get the flag. And along the way, there are various like turrets and occasionally like other helicopters that try to attack you. And it—I mean, it's not like maybe the best game in the world, but I really enjoyed my time with it. It was actually one of the first 3DO games I ended up beating. And yeah, I just—I had a really fun time with it and ended up like seeing a good chunk of the game. I don't think I played every map, but I unlocked all the maps.
Right.
But I really enjoyed it, and it's an easy game to find. And when if you look up like best 3DO games, Return Fire is usually in that list somewhere. Yeah. So it's kind of a defining game for the console.
And if you really want to experience it, there is a PlayStation port as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then lastly, Icebreakers.
Icebreaker is a very interesting one. It is a strategy puzzle game where you play as a white pyramid on its side, known as the Dude Meyer.
The Dude Meyer.
Best character ever. And essentially, you go through a bunch of like stages where there's a whole bunch of pyramids, and you have to like either like ram or avoid like specific pyramids to clear the map. And they're all different colors, and they all have different attributes. And you kind of have to clear the map by taking out certain ones, either using like your you have like a projectile attack, or you just ram them. And it's just a fun, unique kind of game.
Yeah. Very, very mid-90s. And then as you go on, there are like stage hazards that happen as well. And yeah, it's a fun game. It's weird it's called a puzzle game, but I don't know what else you'd call it.
It's a game that if it came out today on like, say, iOS or like Android Store, it would be right at home. It, like, the fact that it's on 3DO is honestly kind of like probably what held it back from being like a successful game, because it honestly, like, if you put it out like now as a little like cheap like little like store game, it would probably sell a lot.
Gotcha. Now this one may be pretty easy, and I feel like I already know what the answer is, but I'm gonna put y'all in a scenario real quick. You now work for Sony, as we were saying off camera. You know, they do the best remakes and remasters and nothing else. So what's a game you would bring back from the 3DO? I feel like the answer is Gex, but maybe I will come up with something else.
I mean,
think about that.
Technically, it's not an active series right now. I'd like to see Road Rash come back.
Road Rash, right?
Road Rash should be a good one. There is technically like a weird reboot of that series, but called Road Redemption. But I think me and Bill will end up covering that at some point. Just trying to look. Need for Speed still exists, so that doesn't count. A good Madden? That'd be nice. I haven't had one of those in a long time. I think maybe something like Lucien's Quest would be cool to come back, you know?
Okay.
Like take an old RPG and bring it back, you know? We can't get Breath of Fire anymore, so, you know, let's get Lucien's Quest.
There we go. All right, very cool. Now, if you were going to podcast about something completely different, what would it be?
Does it have to be video game related, or?
If anything you want.
So this is hard for me because this kind of was my doing a podcast about something completely different.
Yeah.
I could see Bill doing like a NASCAR podcast.
Very true.
You know, honestly, if I was going to do another show like completely separate from like gaming and pop culture stuff, I'd want to do maybe like a music podcast.
I already do one, so I can't say that. So, I mean... I do know a lot about politics, but everyone would get mad at me if I started doing that, so...
Yeah.
Maybe not be for the best. Wrestling would be fun. It'd give me a reason to get back into wrestling.
Do a wrestling podcast? What would the title of the wrestling podcast be? On the spot. On the spot. What is it?
Don't work yourself into a shoot, brother. HH.
Bill, are we going with the NASCAR podcast? Is that what you're going to do?
I think I'd actually do like a music podcast, honestly.
Okay. It wouldn't be fun water bottle facts?
No, that Alex already that, has
that's
that.
That's for Alex, yeah.
She's already got that reserved. She's got a co-host lined up at everything.
Does she really?
Why doesn't she do it?
So apparently she put out a thing about it jokingly, and I guess... our mutual friend Schnickerman actually said he'd do it, so I don't know. I don't know if they're actually planning on doing this or not, but she told me to make a logo, which I still haven't done.
I mean, a podcast like that's about the history of like bottling water,
yeah,
I think would be fascinating.
You think Alex will do a podcast about the history of bottling water?
See, I think she'll say she will. But she'll never do it, because this is Alex we're talking about.
Well, hey, if she gets one episode out of it, I call that a win.
Yep.
Yeah.
I got to thinking while I was sitting here asking y'all questions. I was like, what I should have done was DM'd Thrakir earlier and said, hey, could you get a water bottle before we record? I want to annoy Bill real quick, and let's read the facts off the water bottle.
Well, I have my emotional support reusable guy right here. You know, it's an Owala, a hashtag ad. It's an Owala. No, it's like I bought this at work because it was on clearance for like $12. So I was like, yeah, reduce my carbon footprint or whatever the fuck they say these days. So yeah, I got it. And it's really nice. It has quite a few dings, but it still stands.
Go.
And I have a nice Gunst sticker on it. It's a character from Shining Force. Shout out to Shining Force Central. So
there you go.
Nobody's ever asked about this guy, ever. Like, I think they just assume, yeah, that's something he would like. It's weird. It's an armadillo in a steam-powered suit of armor.
You know, honestly, I didn't think twice about it either when I saw it on there.
It's some weeb shit. It looks about right.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, I know Bill has been asked this before, but I want to kind of pick this off for the 3DO specifically. What makes, like, the best 3DO game? Like, what is it about a game on that system that you're like, yes, this is just a perfect 3DO game?
Honestly, to me, the best 3DO games are the ones that are just fun and unique.
Like, games that would only be made for that system, you know what I mean? Games that are just too... different to like not be on say Sega or Nintendo consoles,
right.
But also are like not like a little too early for say like the PlayStation,
right?
So they kind of fit in this weird middle ground. Like a lot of them are just like PC games brought to console as well, and PC gaming in the 90s was a wacky place. So yeah, it's nice to see games that are unique and provide experiences that just aren't made anymore.
Right.
Like with Gex, it's like, yeah, it's a 2D platformer. There's like a million of those now. But something like Twisted the Game Show, like, or Club 3DO, like, nobody makes those kind of games anymore. Unless they're on Steam hiding in the background somewhere. They probably are, you know? So it's just nice to see these kind of games that are just like... I think it's what makes the podcast worth doing. Like, just finding the weird stuff. you know, that nobody knows about and, like, and actually getting to play it.
To me, like, my favorite parts of, like, recording an episode are, like, say for Icebreaker in particular, like, one of my favorite parts of that game was the opening cutscene, just because it was so goofy and, like, there's a point literally, like, that game has, like, one of the greatest, like, death sound effects ever, because it's literally just this, like, childish Uh-oh. Voice going, uh-oh.
But for the two of you, and I know Threk, you said you do a music podcast as well, but I guess you can pick from any of y'all's podcasts. What's your best moment?
Best moment.
That's to you. Like, what's your best moment?
The one where he caught himself saying a bad word.
I'm still mad about that.
Bill.
That was literally when we recorded the night before this. It was during that, and it wasn't so much funny that he said the word. It was that, like, he started saying it, and then halfway through he's like, "Oh, why did I say that?" And he's like, "I got him edit." So it was the first time he had to edit the show.
I think it was more just the fact that I was more upset with myself than anything.
But it was great.
Can I know what the word is? I'll cut it out.
It was
starts with an R.
Yeah. Imagine, yeah,
he dropped a hard R, everybody.
No. I don't want to go there.
If he had said that, we would have canceled the show.
I would have canceled the show.
Yeah, I would have been like, I'm going to start talking about the Jaguar now.
No, it was very much early 2000s, like, recess talk. Like,
Xbox Live chat.
Yeah, it was just... And I was talking about goddamn Pokemon, too. That's how the juvenile shit really came out.
You know what's funny is that I'm going to cut out, you know, what you said. And then everybody's going to be like, oh, it's, you know, playground Pokemon talk. And everybody's going to be thinking about, like, 9 different words that could be used.
It's a guessing game.
It wasn't anything bad. It was just something that I was upset with myself for, because I feel like I'm better than that now. But best moment, though. I don't know yet, to be honest, because we've had a lot of great episodes. Like, I don't think we've had, like, a stinker at this point yet. Like, every episode I think we've done has been wildly entertaining and just fun to go through. Right. Even, like, Balls, which was the most miserable game we've played so far. And even that episode, I feel like we still got an hour out of it. Like, it was still an enjoyable experience.
I think it helped that I was still sick. I was recovering from my illness, so it's like I was dragged out of bed to talk about this terrible game, which I thought would have been part of the joke.
Yeah.
And I was just more confused at this game's existence than I still am. I still know why that game exists.
It's weird, because, like, 3DO is a lot different from, like, say, when I'm doing, like, GNC or Geek Addicts, where they're just, like, completely different beasts entirely.
Right.
Like, 3DO, out of all the podcasts I do, is the most structured and it has an actual direction for the most part. So it's like every episode we've done has been very much like, aside from like a tangent here or there, but I mean, it's like every podcast has tangents. Like, it's just a part of podcasting. We've been very on point. So I'm trying to think of like a truly outlandish or like crazy moment.
It doesn't have to be crazy. It's just best to you. Maybe, like, not to lead the witness, maybe it's you know, something you look back fondly on.
The moment he dreams about at night.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I guess for that it would be the Twisted episode. Like, that one was just something about that the Twisted episode or like the Madden episode, because like we legit spent half that just talking about American football.
Oh yeah.
The best part is that episode was a two-parter. Where, well, it was a two-game episode, because it was half Madden, and then like the last like 10 minutes were FIFA, because there wasn't much to say about FIFA.
Yeah, because we thought it would be cute to throw both footballs in there, right?
Right.
And then we talked a lot about American football because we're American. And then when we got to soccer, it's like, it's soccer, I think. It's fine. Soccer. I mean, there are Americans who love soccer. Like, it's their thing. But it's I've never gotten into it.
You know what a good episode was, just for, like, the game we played and how, like, actually fun it was to experience? Need for Speed.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Like, realizing how well that game has held up and how it's... We kind of came up with the conclusion that, like, that's the 3DO's legacy right there.
Yeah.
Because out of everything that came from the 3DO, Need for Speed is like this one thing that's still going to this day.
Yeah, its last game was what, like last year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. Well, so we're heading back to the retro store, right? We're off to the retro store. We're going to grab two more 3DOs. We're picking up three of the same games. You know, we're picking up Gex. Let's see how good I remember this. I want to say Friendly Fire, but it's Under Fire.
Return.
Return Fire. Damn it. Now I'm a bad host now.
That's okay.
And
neither am I.
You're not supposed to agree with me.
I'm not a good host either.
All right. So we're picking up the three games, right? I don't know. Let's say Need for Speed. Because that's where it started, and it's on my mind. And you're going to get to pick two people. It could be anybody that you're going to have on for guests. And they're going to play those three games, come on and talk about it. Who's the two people that you're going to make play 3DO games?
I'll say, Bill, you want to do one, I do one.
Okay. So the one person that I'd want to have on the show just because of, like... Now, is this, like, anybody, like, famous?
Anybody.
Okay.
Anybody. They could be dead, they could be alive... Could be your neighbor.
William Shakespeare.
I mean, if we're going to have... If there's any one guy I want to sit down and play 3DO games with, it's Trip Hawkins.
100%.
Trip Hawkins. I know the name. I'm just trying to place the guy.
He's the founder of EA?
He's the founder of EA and also the founder of 3DO.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes.
Yeah, literally like the Steve Jobs of like EA and 3DO, basically.
Gotcha.
And he's apparently super active on Twitter, and he's actually apparently kind of a nice dude from what I've heard, so I'd love to, like, just chat talk with him about 3DO and his vision.
We need to cold DM him. That's what we need to do.
That's all you do. You just DM him, say, hey, we do this podcast. Would you like to talk to us?
See, there's a couple 3DO Twitter accounts that we've been meaning to, like, cold DM to just get him on here. Because I'm sure we could get something out of him.
And Thrak, who are we bringing on?
Well, if we're gonna do that, I just think it'd be funny. Phil Spencer, that'd be funny. Because I have a feeling Phil Spencer knows what a 3DO is.
Think so.
Oh yeah, he seems like a guy who knows his gaming stuff. Like he knows what he's talking about.
Well, I mean, one of his favorite games is Voodoo Vids. I mean, that shows you that guy has taste right there.
Well, and he wore a Hexen shirt. You know, just kind of a deep cut.
You don't even have to be a Microsoft fan to like Phil Spencer. He just seems like a really cool dude.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He just seems nice, to be honest.
He's a man of the people.
Yeah. All right. So what's the best, like, genre of game for your podcast? Is there something that, like, really lends itself well?
FMV games?
FMV games?
Okay. FMV game. We've had a lot of success with racing games.
Well, there's a lot of racing games on 3DO.
I mean, we've covered three of them so far, and only one hasn't been good.
Yeah. And with FMV games in general, there's always something to talk about, because they're usually very interesting, full of, like, hammy acting and just out of just crazy premises. You know, like, there's one I really want us to play, a game called Psychic Detective. It's like an FMV. I think it's like a murder mystery type game. I'm not sure. But I don't think Bill has it yet, so we haven't been able to cover it. But I know in the future we're going to do Wing Commander 3.
Okay.
Which is an FMV game, but it's also like a space shooter, but it has like Mark Hamill, Malcolm McDowell in it, and it's like revered as like a genuinely fantastic FMV game. And I've never played it, so.
We're also
it has
eventually.
Four discs.
Yes, it does. We're also eventually going to cover The Infamous Plumbers Don't Wear Ties. That's going to be a big milestone episode for us.
Yeah, when the definitive remastered edition of that comes out, we will be talking about it.
Nice. And guys, I hate to tell you this. Y'all have lightning round of my questions. I want y'all to know. We have lightning round the questions. I have one more for you, and it's kind of related to a question earlier. But just overall, dream guest. You don't have to make them play anything. Just somebody you would love to have on and talk to. On, I'd say any of your podcasts, if you don't want to repeat yourself.
Reggie Fils-Aimé.
Reggie would be fun.
Reggie, have you read his
Where's
book?
Where's Mother 3, damn it.
Have you read his book?
No, I haven't. I've heard it's really good.
It's really good. If you get it on Audible, he reads it himself.
Ooh, nice. And it also I love audiobooks.
It also has an exclusive interview with him and Jeff Keighley at the end of it, which normally I can't stand Jeff Keighley. It's something about his face. I don't know what it is. But
Keighley is a weird guy.
If,
like,
if I don't have to look at him right and I just listen to him, he's fine. It's something about his face that just sets me off.
It's weird. Like, Keighley, you can tell he's a genuine fan of gaming and all that, and he wants to try to, like, give it as much exposure as possible. Maybe it's just the fact that he's, like, he's just a rich kid, and he's just, like, this is what he does with his, like, free time or whatever. It's like, right. he could be doing worse things, right. But, you know, I think it's just he kind of radiates this aura that people don't really care for. And also, he just always sucks off Kojima, which feels excessive. Like, I watched that Death Stranding 2 trailer. I hate to say it. Maybe Konami was right. Maybe they were, okay?
I think you might agree with me. I said it looks like a toddler telling a story.
It kind of is.
You know?
Like, you can tell Kojima has a lot of really good ideas, but he needs, like most great creative minds, they need somebody to tell them now.
Right.
And Kojima doesn't have that anymore because he doesn't need it.
Right.
So, that's just my opinion, though. But so, I do like Kojima. No hate or anything.
So, we got Reggie Fils-Aimé as a dream guest. Bill, dream guest.
So, mine's a little bit cheating, but it's two people, but they're a package deal, kind of a pair.
Right.
And that is, I'd really like to have on Jason Rubin and Andy Gavin, the founders of Naughty Dog, because I really want to ask them about Way of the Warrior and how that game came to be.
You don't want to ask them why they've remade The Last of Us 90 times?
Well, no. They left the company, like, after Jack 3. They haven't been involved in a long, long time.
No, what you do is then you get Chris from A Novel Console to, like, interrogate them about why he hates their game so much.
And then they'll be like, we didn't make half of these.
He's like, and they'd be like, it's an old-ass game from the 90s. Of course it doesn't age well.
I really want to hear about the process of, like, I guess this is a little sneak peek for our Way of the Warrior episode, but I'd like to hear about, like, they did all of their digitized mocap in their apartment building, which was also their studio at the time. And they had, like, just, like, bed sheets up on the wall. And apparently all the neighbors thought they were just filming some weird porno.
It's easier to explain.
Yeah, that's... I would just be like, yeah, sure, absolutely.
Because Jason Rubin plays, like, two of the characters in the game as well. Like, he did the mocap for two of the characters. And I just like to pick their brains because those guys are two of probably the most interesting, like, creators in the industry that we don't really know a ton about.
All right. Well... Guys, we're out of questions for Between Two Pods, but this is my favorite bit, where the AMA gets flipped. Is there anything you would like to ask me?
Well, I did come up with a couple questions, so let's see. All right. They're all very simple, but they were just literally the first things that came to my head, okay?
Perfect.
So we're going to start strong. Boxers or briefs?
Oh. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm a thick-thighed lad, so if I'm at work and I'm going to be doing a lot of walking around, we're going boxers.
Alright.
But if I'm lounging around the house, briefs.
I respect it.
That's a complicated answer for such shouldn't be, but it is.
That's what podcasts are for, long-winded answers to very simple questions. You know?
Yeah.
Coke or Pepsi?
Dr. Pepper.
I respect that. Genesis or Yes?
I'm sorry, what?
He doesn't know.
Oh, man. You don't know 70s progressive rock?
I'm about to say, I was about to make a joke about, you mean the band?
Both of them bands. Which band
Okay,
do you prefer?
Okay. You said Genesis. My first thought was console, so I'm...
No. The Phil Collins thing.
No, we'll take Yes.
Yes? Oh. Yes. I respect that answer.
Yes. I mean, he is a JoJo's fan.
So. I am a JoJo fan, so...
That's fair.
You hit me with that bass riff, I'm going to be over there jamming.
Yes, it's a great band. I've been listening to their album Drama a lot recently. Great record. All right. Do you have a favorite geometric shape? So, like, a square, a parallelogram?
Do you want to know the best shape?
Yeah.
Best shape.
Yeah.
There's no... You can't argue against it. The hexagon.
Explain.
The hexagon is the bestagon of everything, right? It's very simple. So think about how you maximize tiles for Squarespace.
Mm-hmm.
Hexagons is the best way to do that. You want to make a structure really rigid that you can't break? hexagons. That's why cardboard on the side is made of hexagonal patterns. Bees want to maximize the amount of wax to honey they do. What do they do it in?
They do it in hexagons.
They do it in hexagons. Your eyes that you use to see with. I know you two wear glasses. I don't. So, you know, what do your eyes use to see?
Glasses.
Well, yes.
Sorry, I didn't have good genetics, buddy.
But hexagonal patterns, right?
That like is true.
Cones
that
and
is
everything.
True.
Right, so the hexagon is the bestagon.
Yeah. I like he had a very scientific reason for that. Because like a friend of mine, or an old coworker of mine, she was trying to be a teacher. And her way of opening up to her students was asking them, like, oh, what's your favorite shape? You know, gets people thinking. So.
Yeah.
All right, my last one, this is a inside the actor's studio question,
ooh,
which I always really liked, and that is, what is your favorite curse word? Yeah.
Probably fuck. I use it as an adjective, a verb, a noun. It gets used as everything.
Yeah.
It's just
fuck
starting to lose.
Fuck is a
it's,
good one.
It's
very
starting
versatile.
To lose its, like, swear status, and it's just becoming part of, like...
It kind of is. I've been.
It's versatile, you know. That's what's great about it.
Man, I've been on a big South Park binge lately. I'm on a bit of an anime break, and I've never watched it all the way through. And I got to the episode a while back where they say shit like 100 times.
Oh yeah, when they finally were allowed to say shit, so they went and fucking did it as much as they could to get away with.
Yeah,
they shat all over it.
Yeah, and it's just the word shit everywhere, and it's really funny, even towards the end where it starts to lose this feel and then it comes back.
Fuck's just a fun word to say. Like, it just comes off the tongue well. Actually, fun fact, I was at the, I had to stop at a Target today, like, just to pick something up, and I do a little game now whenever I go out to, like, a store that's, like, full of people, and I'll just do a count of how many times I hear people just drop an F-bomb, because it's so common now. Like, I think I had, like, 20 by the time I got out of there.
Though it's funny, if you ever hear, or if you ever watch, like, say, footage of people just doing their thing, and, like, say, like, the 80s and 70s, people were dropping it like crazy then, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, but, you know, you're not supposed to say it.
In certain contexts, you know.
Yeah. So I gotta ask Slade.
Oh, no.
Is that a backwards compatible PS3 back there?
It is, actually.
Oh, nice. You got one of the rare ones that people
want. Dude, that is, but I mean, it's fine. The PS2 is.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't use mine to play PS2 games either. It's just I can say it plays them.
Didn't the PS3 not play PS2 games that well?
Some, well, yes, no, kinda.
Okay, I never played a PS2 game on a PS3.
So it depends on the game. Some games it just hates, and there, to me at least, there's no rhyme or reason for if it's going to hate, you know, a PS2 game or not.
So I've actually done some research. I found out at least one game in particular, and it's hilarious because it's a piece of shit game, but it's SpongeBob SquarePants Revenge of the Flying Dutchman. They did some weird loading fuckery in that game, and the PS3 doesn't know what to do with it. Like, it had something to do with, like, crashing the PS2 to load or some weird shit that, like, you wouldn't see in any freaking company, like, any, like, sort of, like, developer anymore. But
right.
it was so ridiculous that, like, the PS3 just, like, craps itself when it tries to figure out what it's doing. It's like, nope, won't play.
Yeah, it's like, well, and then, so the Wii, I don't know if you can see it, it's probably behind the boom mic here, but the Wii will not play GameCube games, so I'm in this weird spot.
Oh, you got one of those one of the later Wiis that doesn't have the GameCube and stuff.
Yep.
Oh, that sucks, man.
Yep. That's fine. An ex-girlfriend left it at my house, and when she asked for it back, I told her it wasn't here. So, free Wii.
I often wonder, like, all the casual people who bought a Wii, like, originally,
right,
what they thought of those GameCube ports on the top. They're like, what the hell are these?
Oh, my favorite is when you go to a retro store, and you'll get someone who comes in, and they're like, do you have GameCubes? And they're like, we're all out of GameCubes. And they're like, oh, man. They're like, well, we have Wiis. They play GameCubes. They're like, no, it's not the same. And the store is literally like...
What?
It's literally the same.
Yeah.
If anything, it plays them better.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only reason you get an actual GameCube is either you're super nostalgic like I am, or you really want the GBA adapter.
Yep.
Which, even then, like, the disc for that is so expensive. Like, the player itself is super cheap. It's the disc has the software on it.
You can mod them easily now, though, to bypass the disc entirely.
Yeah, it's still kind of funky, though.
Yeah.
Because there's some people like, oh, put in your copy of Wind Waker and do this weird shit, and it'll, like, crash the thing and load it. Or, and I'm like, what are you talking about?
There we go. Thrak, I want to go back to one of your questions.
Sure.
So, and I think I've asked this to Bill, and if I haven't, you can answer this as well. Obviously, all three of us like music. Everybody likes music. But do you have an album?
I know some people who don't.
No, you don't. They're not real people. Those are NPCs. Now, do you have an album in mind that you can listen to forward or back without skipping a single song? Now, to give you an idea about this is, like, one of my favorite albums is Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge by My Chemical Romance. I can't count that one because the interlude track, I skip it every time.
It's always funny when you go on, like, Spotify and you look at some albums if they have, like, intros or, like, interlude skits and they're always, like, nothing. Like, people always skip them.
Yep.
Like, why was that even a thing? Like, especially, like, in like, rap music, they would always have, the skits. And it's like, you guys aren't that funny.
No.
You're not as funny as you think you are.
No, but they're having fun in the studio or
whatever. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. There's one I always liked in Outkast's Speaker Box, Love Below. It's the one on Speaker Box where it's Big Boy's like son in the studio. Just like they're messing around. Like, I always found that one cute, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I have an album in mind. I just pulled it.
Bill went off and got a fucking vinyl.
Yes, I did.
I would if I had the vinyl version of this record, and I do.
All right. So what we got, guys?
I'll let you go first, Thrak.
Okay. So have you ever heard of a band called XTC?
Yes.
It is their English Settlement record from 1982.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the original master edition, where I guess they were doing a bunch of vinyl remasters, and they're like, oh, why don't we just put this out on CD as well? And yeah, this album is fantastic. It's one of those records that when I first heard it, I fell in love with it, but every time I listen to it, like, one song sticks out in a way that it didn't before,
right.
You know? Like, songs that you used to not care for, but then you listen to it again, you're like, oh no, that song's actually, like, really good, and now it's like, damn it, I like all these tracks. Well, there's one track I don't care for, Melt the Guns, just because I think lyrically it's a little too up its own ass, but again, we're not getting there. But regardless, like, it's a fantastic record. But, I mean, I could also say Brian Eno's Before and After Science, In the Core of the Crimson King by King Crimson, Brand X's Unorthodox Behavior. It's like a jazz fusion band with Phil Collins on the drums. There's a bunch. Music is, like, that's what I know most over, like, everything else. So.
Right.
So the people listening can't see it, but I have behind me my entire CD collection back there of like over 4,000 CDs, and before
Mine's
I was into
modest compared to him.
before I got really into game collecting, I was a huge CD collector, and like music's kind of like my second passion, honestly. So thinking this wasn't too hard to think of, because ironically I just got this record and vinyl, but the CD is one of my favorites of all time. There was one album I could listen to just on repeat all the time and never get old. It is Sing the Sorrow by AFI.
That's such a Bill record.
Yeah, I expected it to be an AFI album, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, hey, this album came out the same year as the album you mentioned, Slade, and this band may or may not have inspired that said band.
That's true.
And this album is great to me. Like, this was their first one where they kind of, like, they dropped the hardcore stuff and they kind of went for the full, like, emo goth punk style. And there is, like, so many great songs on this, like Girls Not Grey, The Great Disappointment, Airplane, Paper Airplanes, Makeshift Wings, The Celluloid Dream, Silver and Cold. Just a shit ton of, like, great songs that, like, still hold up to this day. Like, Davey Havok's voice, like, really kind of hit its peak here. Band is so tight, the songwriting's so strong, like, legit, like, this gets played, like, once a week for me.
So this is, like, when they went, like, adventurous.
This is when their entire fan base dropped them because they went major label, because punk fans are stupid like that.
Yes, they are. They think bands like Sex Pistols are good.
Yeah. I mean, like, hey, The Offspring had Smash, which is a great album, and then they went major label and they made Ixnay and the Ombre, which is an even better album, but no one listened to it because it was on a major label. It's just stupid.
I mean, it kind of, I don't know, it, I guess if you're the punk, it seems like you're betraying the punk rules, I guess, the unwritten rules.
See, but punk... usually, like, the punk bands I like are usually doing something different, you know? Like if you ever heard the band Minutemen.
Yes.
You know, Minutemen are really cool.
If you listen to Jackass, you've heard Minutemen. That's
yeah, but, like, if you actually, like, sit down and listen to their records, it's like, yeah, they're punk, but they're not, like, what you expect to be punk, you know? They sound more like on the Talking Heads side of punk than anything else. But that's what I like. You know, also like Talking Heads. I love them.
I think Brett Gerchwitz, the guitar player for Bad Religion, said it best. He said, he's literally like, punk fans are like some of the biggest hypocrites on earth. They'll throw you away if you do like a Nikes ad while they're wearing fucking Nikes. It's like, they're just, they have their stupid principles that they stick behind, even though like the music doesn't change.
No.
That's why I'm more of a prog rock guy, even though those fans can be annoying in their own rights.
Yes. But... I mean, I love metal and I love punk, but metal and punk have two of the most irritating fan bases of all time.
Yeah. For real, for real.
All right, well, do we have any more questions?
Speaking of music, what's your favorite Starbomb song?
What is my favorite Starbomb song? What is... I'm about to go to Spotify because I want to get the time away.
I mean, you can just say Vegeta Serenade.
No, it's actually not. That is a good one, though. That is... You heard they're working on another album?
They are. Even though they said it was done, like, 3 years ago.
They probably scrapped it.
I would say Welcome to the Mario Party, only because I know the rap bit pretty good.
That's a good one. I love Blowing the Payload, the Overwatch song.
Yes.
That's a good
that
one.
That was also good. The it's a trilogy of songs, but it's the one where they're like
The Simple Plot songs.
Yeah, the Simple Plot songs. Thank you.
The Simple Plot of it was the Simple Plot of Final Fantasy VII, the Simple Plot of Metal Gear Solid, and the Simple Plot of Kingdom Hearts. My favorite part is the end of the Metal Gear one is like Dan literally just goes, oh good, okay, can we get a guest finally with a simple plot? And then it's just like, hi, I'm Sora from Kingdom Hearts. And he's like, no, and he just shoots him to go away.
Drac has never been blessed by Starbomb is what I'm noticing at the moment.
I never cared for him. I found them very, like most Game Grump stuff, I find it very annoying.
Either you love it or you hate it. There's like no middle ground on Game Grump stuff, I would say.
I mean, NSP is better, but even then, it's like, I remember like, I bought, I think it was the first covers record. And I listened to it, and I was like, I don't really like these. Like, they're so sterile, and like...
The second like covers
it goes for that,
better.
Yeah. But it goes for, like, that 80s kind of production where everything's kind of flat. And I'm just like, it just doesn't work, you know?
Their best album is Cool Patrol, by far. Yeah.
I, the other night, was in the kitchen with my girlfriend, and I just had NSP's cover album. And she's like, who is this? I know this is a cover. And I'm like, oh, it's Ninja Sex Party. And she's like, what? The guys who make the stupid dick music? And I'm like, yeah, those guys.
I do like Sky Hill, though.
Oh, Sky Hill's amazing.
Sky Hill's very good.
Yeah.
The new album was so good.
It was. I actually really liked it.
Well, Dan's got such a good voice. And it's like,
it's just
hilarious.
I don't like it. I don't like it being
about...
used for like dumb dick jokes or like video game references of games he's never played ever.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
I just feel like a lot of times his talent's not really being used properly.
Nah, but I think at the end of the day, at least he's having fun, and I think that's the important
part.
That's the important part.
He's a lovable guy. That almost got canceled.
Yeah. The dumbest thing ever.
That was a whole thing. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. I think Aaron is more egregious. I don't know. Yeah. Aaron, he just rubs me the wrong way a lot of times.
Nah,
you got to admit, though, fair. Like, Ninja Sex Party, though, like, Danny Don't You Do is probably like one of like the best songs he's ever written.
Yes.
I always liked the question or the answer or whatever.
Oh, the answer, the early song.
Yeah, I like the first part.
Yeah.
Thunder and Lightning was pretty good too, just because it was like over the top metal for no reason.
Yeah.
There's a lot. 3 Minutes in Ecstasy, that's also a good one.
6969 was fun, but that's just because it was a giant Rush parody.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. See, that's the thing. Me and Dan, we could get along on with Rush stuff. I'm a huge Rush fan.
I mean, well, it's Rush. How do you not love it?
Oh.
Oh, you either love or hate Rush. I know people who hate them, like, genuinely. I can see it. I can see it, but...
One album I could listen to every day.
I do have complaints with them, but that's their best record.
Yeah, right here.
Permanent Waves, that's their best album. There's no bad song on it.
There's,
All their other records have at least one.
I will say, my girlfriend has heard the most swearing if I'm ever in the music room, which is off behind the wall that you can't see. And if I'm back there on the drums and I'm trying to play, like, Rush, she'll be like, you're in the
it's
middle
tough.
Of a groove. She's like, you're in the middle of a groove, you lose it, and then I just hear you yell, fuck! And then, like, start over.
In fact, when I used to be a drummer, like, in a band and everything, and when I first started playing, it was trying to do, like, Rush stuff. Yeah. So I set a high bar for myself.
Yeah, you set that bar way too high.
Yeah, but I could do it. A lot of their stuff I could, like, I was able to do both Sicknesses back to back, which is not easy.
I've been trying to learn, YYZ?
No, YYZ's not bad.
No, but it's the timing of everything and the memorization of it is what it is.
Yeah. But probably one of my favorite, like, music moments is once I was at somebody's house and we were just doing some recording. There was it was a big group thing. We were all just kind of messing around, and I warmed up playing "Heart of the Sunrise" by Yes.
Okay.
And if you know that song, it has it's very like paradiddles and all that kind of stuff. I just like started doing it, and then like a lot of the people that were there started freaking out because they were like, "Damn, that's really cool that you could do that," you know. Because, I mean, it's not easy, but Bruford's the man.
I will say, the one Rush album that does not get enough love that is, like, one of their best, Signals.
Yes.
No, Signals gets a lot of love.
It does now. At the time, though, like, there was a lot of people that didn't like it.
That's probably their record I listen to now more than any other. Like, if I'm in a Rush mood, I put on Signals.
Have you thought about the fact that, like, one of the last times Rush played together, obviously post Neil Peart dying, was for the South Park 25th anniversary concert.
Mm-hmm. That was weird. And apparently people are asking them, like Eddie and Alex, if they're going to do stuff, and now they're more open to the idea of it.
Yeah.
I don't, like, the way they were phrasing it was like they might call it Rush.
So
I don't think they will.
Eddie said that, but Alex flat out denied it.
Yeah. Like, well, the original rumor years ago was the Lee Lifeson band.
Yeah.
Is what I heard.
I saw a thing about them getting, like, Mike Portnoy or Danny Carey to come in for it, and I'm like, oh, that's two.
Why not?
That's two tremendous choices.
Yeah.
You have to pick your rock guy to come in there.
I think I think Mike Portnoy said, like, in an interview that if he did it, he would refuse to play under the Rush name.
Yeah.
Because he's not
He did, like, a tribute to Rush. I remember, like, he got, like, Neil's, like, Moving Pictures era kit. And,
I think Neil was his biggest inspiration, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you're a drummer, Neil is one of the gods.
He really has to be. He has this signature ride groove, and then once you learn it, you just kind of end up doing it.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, but it's not like
there's nothing complicated to it.
It's a little jazzy, but it it moves at a nice pace. It's not like Nico McBrain. When somebody pointed out to me that he plays the exact same beat on every Iron Maiden song, I can't unhear it now. Because it is. It's the same beat every damn song. And it makes me go, they should have just kept Clive Burr. Clive Burr was awesome. Great drummer.
Do you ever watch the YouTube channel Drumia?
Sometimes.
They have a thing where they have drummers come in and they play them a song and they've never heard it before.
Yeah.
There's a great one with Mike Portnoy playing Nickelback.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
It's really good, but the funniest thing about it was apparently he was supposed to go on tour with them, but the tour got canceled. They asked him if he would fill in for their drummer while he was, like, out sick.
If only that actually happened.
Yeah, and could you picture Mike Portnoy of all people?
Kinda, yeah. Because he's willing to do anything.
Yeah.
Well, when he
played for Avenged Sevenfold when the Rev died.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he was out of Dream Theater for a while, he played that. He was in Twisted Sister for a while after Angel Parra died.
Yeah.
The Winery Dogs. I mean, the Winery Dogs are legitimately a cool band.
Yeah. He does a lot of stuff with Neil Morse. Yeah. Like, I think he's just Neil Morse's drummer, basically.
If you haven't watched it, I would highly recommend it. It's really.
I should.
It's really cool to watch him come up with the drum part.
didn't they have, like, was it Larna Lewis do a, like, Enter Sandman or something?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
So
that was fun because that man is inhuman. I don't know how he plays like that.
So the fun thing is that, like, you know, obviously they're hearing a drumless track.
Mm-hmm.
So all they get is the song and everything else, and they just have to come up with it. There's a great one of Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, having, yeah. Which,
having learned,
I forget which song that
the
was.
Kill
oh, is
by
it?
30 Seconds to Mars.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one. That one was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot. There was also, for Avenged Sevenfold, for the Rev, what's his name? Phil Collins' son, Nick Collins?
Nick Collins, yep.
Yeah. They made him learn Almost Easy as fast as he could. But they didn't tell him that that's what he was going to be learning. And I can't think of the head guy, Dromio's name. But he, like, runs into the studio with, like, an extra ride cymbal. And he's like, here you go, you're going to need this.
And for some reason, I love their most popular video on Dromio is Sugarfoot playing Smooth Criminal.
Yeah.
It's just him playing it. Like,
it's fun.
Nothing else.
It's because, okay, if you ever watched Sugarfoot playing it, it's because he does the kung fu setup with the cymbals.
Yep.
Where they're like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, because he has, like, because he has the stands where it's like the cymbals are just hanging.
Yeah, and
you
they
know?
Come up back behind him, and he's like,
yeah,
up behind him. And like,
I've tried playing like that. It's not as uncomfortable as you think, but it requires a lot more movement.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about my shoulder coming out of socket one good time, you know.
Slade,
yeah.
Didn't you say you have Bob Breyer's drum kit?
I do.
Oh, nice.
I do. It's stacked up right now. I've been playing on my jazz kit to try to, like, challenge myself to play something smaller.
Yeah. Play some jazz, man.
I'm not talented enough. I'm not skilled enough.
Well, jazz is difficult, but once you get, like, the rough idea, then you can just kind of wing it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I started playing rock and punk rock and southern rock, and, you know, that's just the hole I fell for playing drums.
Oh, yeah.
Jazz drummers in metal is, like, still one of the craziest things that somehow works.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Gar Samuelson and Megadeth.
Yep. I always equated myself as a drummer, like a rock drummer who's trying to be a jazz player. That's how I always equated my playing. And then there was also, like, I love rhythm and blues and soul drumming. Like, on, like, Stevie Wonder records, like, mm-hmm. Stevie's drumming is so ridiculous, but I always loved it so much. And
yeah.
And I learned to groove playing, like, Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. Like, I would just put that album on, just play the whole thing in one go.
So,
you know, you just learn to groove.
Here's a question for y'all. Ringo Starr. Good
great drummer.
Good drummer.
Oh, fantastic. Are you kidding me?
For what he did?
Yeah. I call him the bestest, sometimes worstest. It just depends.
He was never technical, though I think he could be if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But he always approached the drums with so much creativity and had such really unique ideas for drums. Like people always point, like, Rain, if you want to hear him actually play. Like, Rain is good. Like, that's not easy to play. But then you have stuff like In My Life or A Day in the Life or
right.
Come Together, which is, like, very unique parts that no other drummer would have come up with, especially at that time.
Or Ticket to Ride. No one,
Ticket to Ride's great.
No one was
yeah.
doing anything like that. And
well,
then,
he's slightly late.
Yeah.
Or as he says, I was probably high.
You know how you can tell Ringo's drumming was so unique? You listen to, like, this beginning of the White Album, and you listen to Back
to
in the USSR and Dear Prudence, and you're like, that's clearly not Ringo.
Well, I think Back in the USSR is a weird mixture of John, George, and Paul doing the drumming, and then Dear Prudence is just Paul.
Yeah, it's weird, because you can tell right away, you're like, that's not Ringo.
But really, I think that the track that kind of blew me away with his playing is Tell Me Why. Like, that fill that starts the song, that's like, that's good, that is smooth as butter,
I think the thing about Ringo is that he's a like song drummer, if this makes sense. Like,
yeah, he plays to the vocals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, as a drummer, when you learn to play the Beatles music, you get so much appreciation for what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn that, like, oh, the drummer has this responsibility that you never think about. You know, it's not just playing a million miles fast and all these crazy notes. Like, Ringo he knows exactly what to play, and he just does it.
Yep.
You know?
When the Beatles remastered, like, CDs, like, came out, like, God, almost a decade ago at this point.
2009. Same day as the Beatles Rock Band.
Oh, man.
9909.
When those remasters came out, and how clean everything sounded. Like, you could hear Ringo's drums so well, and it was like, you really realized, like, just how good he was.
Yeah. And they've been doing, like, the remixes for, like, I think Revolver, Pepper, White Album. I have the White Album one. White Album is, like, one of my favorite records of all time. I know that album front to back.
His drumming is so good on that. Have you seen the documentary thing for the Beatles about them recording, like, their last album? It was on Disney Plus a while back.
Oh, the Get Back sessions? I've seen bits of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
So it's like 4 hours long, and a lot of it's just them dicking around in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
But watching them, like, come up with, Let It Be sounds completely different at the beginning of writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we had always heard those sessions were so, like, full of tension, and, like, that's what broke them up. And then you watch it, and it's like, they're just having a good time.
No. So there's, like, a... You say that, but, like, Yoko Ono,
I mean, there
was,
are,
like, the worst part. Yeah, she was,
I mean,
in their
comfort. Yeah, there probably are bits of tension, but, like, I think Paul said, he was like, it was actually, like, it was better than he had remembered it. Like, it wasn't that bad.
I still think the cutest thing was... When that film premiered in theaters, Julian Lennon didn't want to go, but Sean Lennon asked him if he'd go with them, and he was like, "Fuck it, I'll go." And he ended up enjoying it because he loves his brother. Like, he'll do anything for his brother.
Those two have a very unique bond that nobody else has, you know. Yeah. And they have two completely different memories of their dad, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think Julian's finally forgiven his dad at this point.
Yeah. Well, I always give Lennon a little bit of a pass, only because he never got a chance to, like, redeem himself.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, because if you read interviews of the time before he passed, like, he seemed to be in a much better spot.
Him and Paul were on good terms. Like, there was, like, a lot of thoughts that, like, the band was going to get back together.
Yeah, he was getting his relationship with Julian back together, and he just seemed very optimistic. And he's like, you know, we can... get things better, you know? And the Beatles probably would have reunited in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've heard it was in the play. It was in, like, legitimately being talked about when he died. I don't know how true that is, but it probably wasn't outside of the realm of possibility at that point.
Yeah, and that documentary, they're making it, I mean, you watch, like, George walk out at one point, and it's because, like, I guess John and Yoko had annoyed him one too many times.
Well, and George always got the shaft because he was always writing these good songs. Yeah. And John and Paul are like, well, we're John and Paul. No, you know. But then he puts out his first solo record, and it's, like, the greatest thing ever.
It's a triple album, and it's fucking amazing.
It's so good. And there are versions of them, of the Beatles doing All Things Must Pass. It's a shame they didn't do that song because it perfectly fits the band. Yeah. But, like, their versions of it are so good. Like, their three-part harmonies singing the chorus. Oh, beautiful.
I didn't expect this to take this turn, by the way, tonight.
But I'm a Yoko defender, okay? I don't hate Yoko. I think she gets way more flack than is deserved. Like, and I kind of agree with John, where it's like she's actually a very important force in music, but she'll never get the credit that she's due. Not until she dies.
See, my favorite Yoko video, unfortunately, is one of her not-so-great moments. It's the infamous...
Is it the Chuck Berry one?
The Chuck Berry video. It's,
that is great. That's so funny. Yeah.
She's just, like, screeching in the microphone.
And they mute her.
If you guys have never actually listened to her albums, like, there's some genuinely good ones in there. I recommend them.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the same. I think she added a lot of tension that was unnecessary to what they were doing. You could tell it in the studio.
To be fair, though, they were all kind of a mess at that point.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was... necessarily her fault. I think it was John just wanting her around everywhere.
Yeah.
It was more on John, I think.
Yeah. Well, like, George points out, like, he's annoyed with both of them.
Yeah. You
know. And Paul wanted to tour again, and none of them wanted to tour.
But I think Paul has said later, he's like, you could tell that, like, they just were totally in love with each other, so you just kind of have to respect it.
Yeah.
You know, because then, like, people gave Linda the same shit after they broke up, you know? And it's like, well, what did Linda do? She didn't do anything wrong. It's just weird to me. It feels a little misogynistic. If I dare throw that concept out there, like, a little bit, maybe not fully, but
I just don't think Yoko's that great. That's all it is.
Well, if you ever get a chance, listen to her Yoko Ono Plastic Ono Band. That was done at the same time as John's Plastic Ono Band.
All right,
it's better than you think it is.
I'll take a listen and I will let you know.
It's very aggressive and very punky. It's very proto-punk. I think you'd appreciate it for that.
Okay, I'll take a listen while I'm at work tomorrow. But guys, if we don't have any more questions, would you like to tell everybody one more time where they can find you and about your podcast? It's obviously, it's not a Beatles podcast. I know that's what we've been on a tangent for the last
I mean, I could
minutes,
do a Beatles podcast.
I feel I could probably do one too. I think the problem is, though, that's probably a highly saturated category.
Oh, it can't be more saturated than games.
True.
True.
But yeah, so thanks for having us on, Slade. This was fun. Getting to chat about radio and Beatles. But yeah.
Can we get Paul McCartney to play the 3DO?
Does Paul even know what video games are?
We're heading to the retro store with Paul McCartney.
I think he does, but I think he thinks video games are like Pong and Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Fair. Very fair. If anything, Ringo's the one that's probably more like hip and trendy.
Wait, Paul did a song for a video game a couple years ago. Was it for like Destiny?
Oh, I think maybe.
I swear he did.
I'll have to look at this off cam.
I'm throwing us off a loop. I'm so sorry.
So anyway, it's like me when I'm trying to end GNC and Alex interrupts me every 3 seconds.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're the 3DO Experience. It's a, like we said earlier, a 3DO retrospective podcast where we talk about the console, the company behind it, and everything in between. It releases every Wednesday, and you can find all of our links on Linktree/TheBarbaroGames. We're on every podcasting platform, and we have a video version of our podcast that releases on YouTube, usually right before the episode goes live on podcasting services. And you can also join our Discord server if you want to see some insanity every now and then. But yeah.
Facts about water bottles.
Yeah, a lot of facts about water bottles.
Kermit the Frog every 5 seconds.
It's Friday.
Yep.
Alrighty. Awesome. Thank you guys so much again for joining me. This is not the direction I expected us to end up in, but you know, it's my favorite part of Between Two Pods. I never know where it's going to go, because as much as people think I'm the host for it, I really think it's the guests that are the host of the show.
Oh,
it's an unexpected journey. It's like a marriage.
Yeah, it is like a marriage, but now we have to get divorced. And thank you everybody so much for listening, and I will see y'all in the next episode.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.